if you want to be able to make a good case for a particular investment, you will ultimately have to make it to someone who is not a cyber person, right? Chances are you work at a company where the CEO is focused on something like manufacturing cars, maybe they're the CEO of a food processing company, whatever. Cyber is not like their day-to-day focus, right? Their focus is on product delivery, and that means increasing sales and cutting costs. Right. So if you're trying to make the case for any kind of cybersecurity investment, you have to be able to think in those terms and make your case on those grounds.
The bar for cyber resilience has been raised. Bouncing back isn't enough. Businesses must recover with certainty. Commvault Cloud Rewind finally gives IT and security leaders true peace of mind while freeing them to focus on AI's full potential. Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. I am your host, Demetrius. And today we are going to dive into some of the non-traditional skills in cybersecurity from those that may not have a technical background. And also we're going to dive into some of the issues that are on the table just around cyber policy as well. So I want to welcome Yamin Huck, who is the Director for Cybersecurity Programs at the Aspen Institute. So Yamin, welcome to the Gumbo.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me. Excited to have this conversation.
So first off, explain to the Gumbo listeners, what is the Aspen Institute?
So Aspen Institute, which I think we would classify as a think tank, although we have some unique nuances that differ us from other spaces, but your listeners might also think, what is a think tank? And the way policymaking often works in DC is you obviously have the government itself, Congress, the executive branch, etc. But adding to that conversation, because there's only so much our elected officials and civil servants can focus on, you have think tanks that are contributing to those policy debates, right? And we really do that in two ways. One is to produce papers, right? Policy memos, long form papers, sometimes up to 200, 300 pages, which I would never recommend anyone do. I think people have realized short form content is a little bit better. And that content is directed at electeds, is also directed at the broader public, right? We love to educate the public on the issues that we really care about. And then the second space is in what's called convening, right? Which is a word that I feel everyone in DC uses over and over again. And basically it just means we help people meet each other, right? Those meetings can be in private, right? They could be private sessions with people in government, in academia, working together, making connections they otherwise didn't have and talking about issues they might not have thought about previously. In addition to that, we also do public events, right? So I specifically work within the cybersecurity program, which is under Aspen Digital, which is like the tech policy hub at the Aspen Institute. So in terms of what we do, private convenings throughout the year for what we consider our membership network of folks in the private sector to work with folks in government and in other academic think tanks, et cetera. And then we also do public events, of which our most famous is the Aspen Cyber Summit, which will be happening in November of this year. And it'll be entering close to its 10th anniversary now. And it's basically an opportunity to highlight the key cyber issues of the day, right? And to bring in voices from the government to talk about those issues. Last year, we had some great conversations, just to name a few, around US-China relations, AI and cybersecurity, the issues with the quantum computing era that will someday be upon us, different types of issues like that. So it's a really great way to, you know, go into the weeds, but also highlight things that people may not have thought about before that affect their lives.
And I'm assuming that you've been to a few of these events, right? Especially the one that you mentioned that's happening in November. That's something that the Gumbo audience should definitely look into attending.
Oh, I would absolutely say so. Yeah, I think, first of all, I'd like to think we do a little bit of a job making our events more fun and engaging, I think, than the typical think tank does. And I think the Cyber Summit this year will feature, I think, a lot of really interesting conversations. And we'll talk about that, I think, a little bit later, about what are the big cyber policy topics that are coming up potentially this year and over the next 4 years. And okay. We do a really great job of not only going into those issues, but bringing in what I consider to be a big bipartisan focus to really figure out what sorts of things we can agree on with regards to these topics.
So. Have you seen DORA really take flight? You're familiar with the Digital Operational Resilience Act from Europe? So I know it went into effect in January, like the 17th or something like that. But have you been having a lot of conversations around that? Because I think it's something that is probably very important, because I know it pertains to financial services institutions.
It's interesting. The resiliency, the conversation about resiliency is something that it's been going on for a while. With regards to specific legislation, we actually haven't heard too much about it yet. And I think that's partially because it's an interesting time in the DC policy world right now. You have a change in administration. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of focus on right now, even before we get to the conversation about policy, who the new personnel is going to be. So a lot of the topics of discussion right now are basically being able to engage with the new cyber team, right? Coming into both the current administration as well as the new Congress. Getting people up to speed on existing topics is the real focus at the moment, of which one of those is the conversation about what regulations could we see on the horizon over the next 4 years with regards to our own policy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. And since we're talking about skills and maybe non-technical skills, right? Because if we think about cybersecurity, we think about someone who's super technical.
Yep.
Someone who probably was born a hacker. They came out of the womb with a hoodie on and they were like in a dark room in a basement somewhere and they knew how to code. But what are some of the non-technical skills that you think are essential for someone maybe wanting to enter into a cybersecurity career?
I think there's a couple that I've noticed, and some of those I've had the fortune of kind of developing over my own career. So I'm by background, a data scientist by training. That's where I started more when I graduated from when the consulting space, right? And so a lot of my role was building models, right, to do things like predict risk calculations, things like that. So I would say a good understanding of data and metrics is really important. And what I mean by that isn't just being able to like crunch numbers, right? But to be able to really think about what matters, what's worth measuring, and being able to connect it to like reasonable good outcomes. I think a lot of people think about stats in kind of a superficial way, right? And getting out of that mindset is really critical. For me, if you are a data science person, you should be the one more skeptical of numbers than anyone else, right? Like you should have a real understanding of what the limits of our models are and how much we can actually know. One thing I always think through is if I'm building a model of any kind, to think through what have I not measured, right? Because oftentimes those things matter too. Oftentimes the most important things in life can't be broken down into numbers, but they have a direct impact on how we interact. To give you a very like specific example, right? I think everyone will agree something like political institutions, right? Democracy, transparency, things like that are very important to like good policymaking. How do you put that in a number form, right? Nice that you can squish and make a judgment call, but you can't really do it. So being able to think mathematically involves being able to think about what the limits of those numbers are. On top of that, a couple other things that I would say, I think being able to think in the language of economics and finance is really important. Being able to think through what the ROI of a particular investment is, at least in broad terms, is a very important decision, right? Like cybersecurity at the end of the day is a portfolio game, right? You make investments in cybersecurity on the basis that they'll offer you some kind of benefit, right? Whether it's a reduction from the risks of an attack or anything like that. If you want to be able to make a good case for a particular investment, you will ultimately have to make it to someone who is not a cyber person, right? Chances are you work at a company where the CEO is focused on something like manufacturing cars. Maybe they're the CEO of a food processing company, whatever. Cyber is not like their day-to-day focus, right? Their focus is on product delivery. And that means increasing sales and cutting costs, right? So if you're trying to make the case for any kind of cybersecurity investment, you have to be able to think in those terms and make your case on those grounds, right? The technical beauty of a solution doesn't always matter to everyone in the room.
So is there like a percentage of having the technical skills versus the non-technical skills? Because I've never heard someone say that it's a portfolio game, which sounds really interesting to me. Now, what type of portfolio game? Let's say there were different components to being maybe a cybersecurity expert. And I think there's also levels to different positions in cybersecurity. So you start at the bottom, maybe as a analyst, and then you work your way up to, I don't know, an administrator, and then you go up to the engineer. But when you say portfolio game, can you give them a little more color around
that? Yeah, no, absolutely. So I previously worked at a company called Cyber Vista, which later merged with the cybersecurity podcast company CyberWire. But Vista, prior to the merger, was focused around workforce development, right? And really being able to help companies assess their employees' skill sets and also develop pathways for them to upskill, right, for whatever roles they might be considered down the line. And in that role, I was the analytics director, which I always called myself like the director of report cards, honestly, more than anything else, right? Either the good news or the bad news about how they were doing and whether they were even like paying attention in class and stuff like that.
Okay.
In terms of the portfolio game, in the workforce aspect, it's going to depend on any like particular role, right? But you need to have a good wide range of skills, especially, right? And it's one of those things where I think of it as almost like an hourglass, if that makes sense, right? Where you should have a broad set of skills, not just like technical, but also like non-traditional skills and communication, analytical thinking and things like that right from the get-go, because you need that flexibility to figure out what is a good fit for you anyway. So being able to jump between different types of roles is very critical. I think in the middle layer, some specialization is often very helpful, right, for your career. But then as you go up into like leadership or at a high, like a more strategic role, those broad-based skills start coming back into play again. So I'm doing a hand motion. It's a podcast, I know, but yeah.
Okay, awesome. And also, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned it earlier, so some of the cyber policy changes in DC right now. There's no secret, Trump administration, Doge, Elon Musk, and everyone else, right? They're super busy. They're moving fast. Yep. A lot of shakeups are happening right now. And yeah, it is what it is. But what's the latest on just the cybersecurity landscape? I also remember hearing that there was, I don't know if there was a new team. And maybe I'm getting that confused with the space program, right? There's a whole thing that's going on with sending people out to explore Mars and all of that. But what are you seeing, or what's your view right now, just overall on cybersecurity, where it fits from a policy perspective, maybe compliance, governance, regulations? Should there be anything that current cybersecurity executives should be worried about or concerned about or should be on their radar right now?
That's a great question. There's a couple of different threads to pull on. I will say one, the new administration has, I think, a very broader look at sort of things they want to prioritize going forward. And what's interesting is I think at that level, there's a lot that both sides of the aisle potentially agree on, right? One is to, and these are technically non-cyber topics, but they link very closely, as you'll see, to like cybersecurity issues. The three things that we're really seeing, right? One is this idea of more like abundance, right? Being able to unleash the economy, produce more at lower cost, at greater reliability, right? At greater quantity too. And to really think about like strategic ways that we can unleash the American economy, especially in critical sectors like healthcare, energy, et cetera. And you can see where the cyber component already plays there, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have abundance or prosperity if like a cyber attack shuts down your power grid, for example, or your water supply, or your hospital, for that matter, in a ransomware attack. So that's number one. Number two is this whole conversation around state capacity, which is just a fancy word for how can the government do things more effectively, right? This is at least what DOGE has been organized for the purposes around. Now, what's a bigger discussion is what is the right way to make the government more effective. Some people will talk about like trimming, cost cutting, et cetera, reducing headcount. But there's obviously another pathway too, which I think will be interesting to see if they consider, which is to take older technology system, older processes that are not fit for purpose and reorganize them along more efficient lines, right? Instead of focusing on like the number of headcount, focus more on what are the hiring and upskilling processes we have for talent that works in government, right? How can we get the most out of the people who work in government, regardless of whether or not you have strong opinions about the number of people who should be there? So that's, I think, part of it. And then the third conversation, and this is has a domestic and international lens to it, is the whole conversation about national resilience, right? How do you take a punch and keep moving? And so this is really, you're going to see a lot of this with regards to foreign relations. I think U.S.-China relations, you can already see a lot of conversations about incorporating cybersecurity components into our trade policy, for example. Really thinking through, like, when we engage in trade with another country, not just thinking about immediate efficiency or growth gains, but also how would that affect us in an international crisis, right? If a company produces critical healthcare products and then we get into an ugly spat with them, does that put us in a bind, right? So we want to make sure that we liberate our ability to be able to act nationally without being stuck in like a pattern or a loop. So that's at a high level, like the things we're saying.
Okay.
What sort of cyber specific topics are they interested under that bucket? Obviously the trade and cybersecurity piece, I think is going to be a very big one. Some other ones that I think are interesting, figuring out the right approach to governing AI development is going to be a very interesting one. So we don't really have any like federal level AI regulation recently, but we've had a lot of like state level bills, some of which have passed into law.
Really?
And that's an interesting space too, because people will give various reasons for wanting to govern AI more effectively to reduce risks, right? But in a lot of these bills, the most frequently given reason is like cybersecurity, right? Like we want to mitigate the risk of a particular model being used to scale a cyber attack of different kinds, right? You think of using AI to create malware or using an AI model to write more effective social engineering and phishing emails, things like that, right? Everyone has different approaches. This is obviously like a much longer discussion about the right way to govern AI. And I think that's going to be an ongoing topic, especially at the national level. And then the third piece I'll add is it's specifically around regulations in general. So one of the big sea changes we've had in the last year was the overturning of a Supreme Court case, Chevron, and what's called like the Chevron doctrine, has now been replaced by the sort of continuing to develop Loper doctrine. And so what the old order basically was that when a regulator, right, in the executive branch, a regulatory agency decides to create a regulation, the courts are supposed to basically give the benefit of the doubt for whether or not that regulation is in line with the laws that Congress has passed, right? As long as the interpretation of the law is reasonable, the courts should defer to the regulator's interpretation, even if it is not like the best interpretation, right? The new doctrine, now that Chevron has been overturned, is that the courts should decide what is the most reasonable interpretation of a particular regulation with regards to the law that it's based on. And the idea being the courts are the legal arbiters, right, on matters of law. So obviously that creates a lot of interesting like challenges, right? What little cybersecurity regulations we've had in the past, for example, in like water, were based on very old laws that were almost certainly written before cybersecurity was a huge issue, right? You think of the guidance we had around water and cybersecurity was based on like environmental laws from the 70s, right? How we develop rules for the future is going to be a big conversation. This means greater involvement from Congress, right? If you can't rely on like ancient laws to write these regulations, Congress will have to act. It'll have to develop more rules in this space and take a more leading approach than it has in the past.
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned the future. And so let's close out with the future of cybersecurity. So I want to tap your brain around the tech as technology evolving or the evolution of technology. Of course, we have artificial intelligence. You mentioned quantum computers earlier, and I see that there are some advancements on the quantum computing front as well. What new opportunities do you foresee individuals, especially with non-traditional backgrounds, in shaping the future of, let's say, cyber policy practice around that?
So it's an interesting question, right? I can't, as cliche as it would be, like I have to talk about AI in this context, right? As the very interesting new technology and a couple of different dimensions. Obviously, there's one component, which is that AI streamlines a lot of the more grunt work in any field, not just cybersecurity, right? That we weren't able to pass. There is a huge downside to that, though, right? Of using that as a crutch, if that makes sense. So let me put it to you this way, right? Like I use AI in my work, right? In sort of policy thinking as like what I consider a debate sparring partner, right? I'll set up like an LLM to basically argue with me over like a specific topic to see what arguments have I not considered.
What tools are you using?
So I use, the one I use is now ChatGPT 03, it's 03 Mini High, which is a very long name.
And it's one of the Perplexity also just came out with the research one, right?
They did, yeah. And ChatGPT also now has a research one, but it hasn't been rolled out to the broader public. It's like you have to be on the pro subscription to get it. But the reasoning models, to me, are the really fascinating ones, even more than the traditional LLMs, because they're able to do a level of analysis that is way more sophisticated than even the original models that came out 2 years ago. But the trick, though, is those tools are only really helpful if you have a good grasp on those issues yourself, right? If the reasoning model is giving me nonsense and I don't have a good background in these topics, I'm not going to know that I'm being fed nonsense, right? So we have to see AI as a complement to our work, not a substitute, for it to be effective. And that means all the skills that people needed prior, they still need those, right? It's just you'll be able to get more out of those skills than maybe you were in the past. And so thinking of AI as like a force multiplier in not just cyber, but in any field is going to be very important. That's also going to be true as we've seen some countries around the world, legislators start to use AI to help write legislation. There's a great opportunity for that, for being able to scale and write legislation more effectively. But that's only true if we keep our brain like turned on. When we, if we use AI to write a 500-page bill and then don't do the work of reading it, that will lead to a lot of problems down the line.
Yeah, I agree with that. And how can Gumbo listeners maybe get more information about Aspen Institute and maybe also yourself?
No, absolutely. Obviously, the Aspen Institute is really focused around thinking about the next set of like policy priorities. So Aspen Cyber Program, which I work at, just released cybersecurity policy recommendations for the new administration, which was a bipartisan effort that we led to develop high-level strategic cyber priorities. I would encourage Gumbo listeners to definitely take a look at that. We'll be having more coming out in that space. Definitely will be a topic of the Cyber Summit, which we should be announcing tickets for in the coming months. So
is it free or?
No, it's paid.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So start saving your money now. Is it? I'm sure you probably have some type of programs or discounts.
We do.
Or...
Absolutely. Especially for students. We have programs set up. Yeah.
And where is the conference going to be?
It will be in Washington, D.C. So
I should have thought about that. It's going to be in
D.C. Well, we had it in New York just 2 years ago, actually. So we have done it in different locations. But the benefit of D.C. is obviously if we're inviting folks from government, they can just pop in. It's okay. Like a walk down the street for them, which makes it a lot easier.
And what's the website?
The AspenCyberSummit.org.
AspenCyberSummit.org.
Yes.
Got it. Yamin, thank you so much for your knowledge. And I saw your history, your trajectory there. Take my hat off to you for being such a student and leveraging your brain power for the greater good of humanity. And just overall sharing your knowledge and information. We need more people like you out here in the ecosystem. So thank you again for being a guest. And we'll have to see about maybe getting you back again in the future sometime.
Sounds good. Happy to do it. Thanks for the great conversation.
All right. And Gumbo listeners as well, please be sure to check us out on YouTube at Data Protection Gumbo. And then we also have the Backup and Recovery Professionals group that's on LinkedIn with around 26,000 cybersecurity, storage, backup and recovery professionals out there. So if you're not a member of the group, please go type it in the search box and I will, or one of the managers will approve your membership to join. It's free. All right. So, Yamin, thank you again for being a guest.
Thank you so much.